Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save. All in one global marketplace.
I've been stabbed. I've been burned. I've been chili bombed. I've been humiliated. We're modern day pirates, you know, like we travel from kitchen to kitchen to learn the best.
That mental health is important. Everybody, you are not weak for going to see a therapist. Yeah. I think.
It's with the old guard. And then they're still resistant to it because they're like, it's taking away jobs, right? But think about our industry and what's happening.
Like, not enough people.
Since 2016, I can remember, was when I first started getting the flood of calls from people of, do you know anybody that's looking for a job? Before that, chefing was fun. It was a career that people were going into.
The Food Network movement.
The Food Network movement. People my age were going into it in droves. There was lines of applicants at your restaurant. You could always go into a drawer and pull out a resume and call somebody to come and do a stage, right? And then in like 2015, 2016, the chef movement started dying off because the newer generation realized it's a very hard job. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of sacrifice.
It's not glitz and glam what they see on TV.
Exactly.
Even the TV guys, you know, when you start seeing the documentaries of the Flays and Fieri's and they're talking about it, they're like, it was 12, 13, 14, 18 hours days, but it's a different type of, it's a different game.
It is.
Right? You're still on your feet, but it's a different, you're in front of a camera. It's still draining. It's just in a different way.
Yeah, it's not the stress of meeting service and perfection qualities to get those stars or whatever, but it's a demanding role that you have to have. And it's still, any chef job I know of, even in my realm now, is hard. It's stressful. There's a lot of moving parts and there's a lot of being asked of us. But the old guard, as you put it, they're the biggest pain in the ass I can imagine in the whole industry. I mean, they serve their purpose. They solidified and codified those traditions and maintained them through the decades and the tumultuous, you know, experimental periods and everything that we've been going through. But it's time they just fucking got out of the kitchen, to be honest with you, Jeff. Like, being resistant to something that can help with all the things you complain about is ignorance to me. Like, there's no place for it, right? The guys that immediately shut down adding ultra text to a sauce because they just don't understand what ultra text is. It's like, well, you use cornstarch, you use tapioca starch thicket. Guess what? Ultra text, it's tapioca starch. It's just modified, right? Yeah. They took out the bad qualities and now you have something that you can just add and it thickens perfectly. Why wouldn't you do that? Right. Why wouldn't you buy a sous vide system to make every single piece of meat you ever serve perfectly cooked? I don't understand this rationale or this understanding or this mindset in chefs. I really don't. Like, I come from a different school of thought where I'm very big into adapt or die, right? Like, and our times are changing, our food system's changing, our labor pool's changing, and that requires change in how we run kitchens. And unfortunately, you know, the old guard's not leaving fast enough, and the people that they've kind of permeated into their minds are holding on to some of those qualities. You know, I'm the old guard. I think, you know, I'm kind of in my ways and thoughts about the old guard because I grew up in the abusive chef culture, man. Like, I grew up, I've been stabbed, I've been burned, I've been chili bombed, I've been humiliated, I've had all kinds of shit happen to me, hazed beyond belief. But that was the way we did it, right? I've worked countless hours for free. Taken advantage of by ownership, sexually harassed in kitchens, but that was the norm. That was a culture. That was the old guard. This is how we do things, and if you can't hack it, get the fuck out, right? Yeah. And I'm glad that that part of the industry is dying and the new guard's coming to the front, but, like, the other part of it is the reluctance to adapt technology and techniques. Why? Why? That's like saying, you know, I'm going to drive a horse and buggy every day just because I like my horse and I'm used to driving it. When you can drive a car next to it, like, why would you do that? If you could afford the car and it was there and it made your life better, why would you hold on to that horse? You wouldn't. Mm-hmm. Nobody did. That's why we don't have horse and buggies on the road anymore. Yeah. Like, there's a certain point where you got to get out of your own way and adapt the technology, right? That's just kind of my stance.
What about, because you teach, so you get to see the up and coming generation. Mm-hmm. And what is it there, right, from who you're seeing in culinary schools, right? Because there's the maybe there's three echelons. There's those that just get into it because that's their, they need money, whatever it is, right? The old school way, the misfits, they don't have anywhere else to go. So they serve, they dishwash. It's still there today, right? It's not going away. People still need jobs, and a restaurant always has that job for the person who's just, I don't know what the hell to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can do something in a restaurant. There's always something, right?
There's always something to do.
So you've got those people. You've got those people that then go into culinary school sometimes because maybe a chef identifies something or says, you know, you have something. You should probably get some more skill or labor if you want to go down that route. If you want to do it the hard way, you can learn in a kitchen and it's just going to take you longer, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have those that just go straight to culinary school that maybe that was kind of me in my mid-20s. Like, I was like, oh, I kind of did the same. I had a mental thing. I was like, oh, I like cooking with my great-grandma.
Yeah. And
I always enjoy when I'm around food and I cook. So I went to culinary school in 24. But I didn't know shit about a kitchen. I'd never worked in a kitchen. Like, that was not my background.
So you didn't get a realistic experience going to culinary school first. Yeah.
Yeah. No, not at all. Now, did I listen to the people around me and my chefs and they said, get a job while you're here?
Mm-hmm.
100%. Yeah. I got a job at the casino, got my ass kicked
traditionally
that way. Right. I was scared shitless. Mm. I had one of my buddies, Lewis, on a few weeks ago, and we reminisced about some of the old times. And I'm like, my first day in the kitchen, I whacked off a quarter of my finger.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to, like, these guys are in there, like, just going to town. And I, you know, cutting wet, you know, thawed out calamari, you know, sliding all over the place. And Cozzini had just came and sharpened all the knives. And I just took off.
Ugh.
And I just bandaged it up. Like, I had, I told myself,
you're scared to be hurt.
Oh, I told my chef, I go, no, I just, he saw me bandaging up and he's like, what happened? And I was like, oh, I just nicked something open from school.
Yeah. But you actually needed stitches probably.
Oh, I needed like my finger, like, put back on.
Yeah.
But I was so afraid. And this was in a corporate environment. Mm-hmm. And we had already went through like safety and like you report it. Cause I had seen, you know, heard stories, you know, even that early of like, you got to go do a report and security comes up.
Yeah.
And the whole nine yards. And I was like, nope. I mean, I worked with a bandage on my hand for like a month.
Yeah.
It hurt so goddamn bad. Yeah. But I don't know. There
That's
was
what
something
is expected.
I was like, these guys are gonna make fun of me. Yeah. And he even said, he goes, yeah, we didn't know if you were gonna hack it. He goes, but when we saw you cut your finger and you just bandaged that up and you still had service that night, and I was going up under the Sally because I was on fry prep.
Ooh. So and in and out of the heat.
And I'm a left hand in the kitchen as my dominant. So when I'm putting up those plates to toast things off, I'm going up by the Sally. Every time that hand even got close, that heat just intensified. But I guess circle back is, what are you seeing in your students? And like, where, again, is it the fresh? Is it the they've been in? And, or is it a mix of everything?
There's a mix, definitely. I teach at Drexel on their food service program. And there, it's more of a... It's not specialized. I mean, we train chefs like every culinary school, but there we have more focus on food science and recipe development and techniques more so than some of the other culinary programs. I went to Johnson & Wales and loved the program there. Had a great time. If I went back, though, and had the choice of doing that or just working in the industry, I probably just would have worked in the industry and saved all the money, because I can't, in my personal career, can't identify other than my externship, I can't identify anything from culinary school that really did it for me, right? That really took me to the next level or helped me achieve any of the things I've done. The one thing I would say, though, is I did my externship at Disney World at Victoria and Albert's, and that opened up a lot of connections and ideas about food that I never would have even considered had I not gone that route. And plus, working for Disney is a pretty incredible experience. Like, learning that business and the management training we went through and hospitality training was world class, some of the best in the world. And like, I still carry those principles and fundamentals with me to this day. So I guess, yeah, school led me to that. But to answer your question, the students that are coming in to Drexel, they're more focused than normal culinary students from what I've seen, because I still work with a good friend of mine, JJ Liu, up at Culinary Institute of America, and I still have contacts like TJ Deladonna at Johnson & Wales and stuff that I stay in touch with. So I'm exposed to those student bodies, and they're dedicated. Like, the new, younger group of chefs that are coming in are, they're not as haphazard as we were going in. That's at least my feeling looking at them. Drexel more so. these kids come in laser focused. Like they are there to learn, and they're there to learn to go far fast in the industry. And a lot of them are there to study so they can go into food development roles with big corporations and stuff, which is a completely different animal than working a line, you know? So to answer your question to my slice of the school world that I'm exposed to, the students are more dedicated now, but they're not accepting of bullshit, right? You have to explain everything. You can't just say it happens because it happens, because they'll fact check you in a second on their phone right in front of you, right? So the information that's available to these kids and how they've been raised with the information and technology, the old guard's dead, right? I give it 5 years before the old guard is literally pushed out of the industry by the newer generation, because the newer generation wants technology. Yeah. They want things to make their job consistent. They want screen access. They want apps. They want to know the nitty gritty of why a roast chicken turns out perfect in this oven versus this oven. Like, they're inquisitive and they find the answers. And I think that's going to do a lot of great and amazing things for our industry. There's no more ignorance. The ignorance is being kind of distilled out at this point.
I think it's going to lead to efficiency.
Yes. Right?
There just aren't people to do the job. So how do you take out some of the jobs that were difficult, right? The monotonous things per se, and make them, because yes, you always have that upper echelon, but we're talking the everyday.
Yeah.
Somebody just wants to go out to eat type places. Those are the places that need, that's where a lot of efficiencies need to be put in place.
I mean, this is like part of I'm calling it the great douching of the restaurant industry, of like getting rid of this old guard and these old tactics, is we, just like I was saying with my weight loss journey, like you get into a routine where you don't realize it's happening. So chefs learn how to cook a certain way. And for the longest time, it was, if I had a problem or I wasn't doing something right, hire more people, get some hands in. That also comes from a culture where there was a lot of free labor going around if you had a good enough name and a good enough restaurant. And we were paying people dirt, poverty wages, and that was expected. And even as a really accomplished line cook, you could make poverty wages. Didn't matter how good you were, unless you were like the management or the owner. Mm-hmm. Nobody made money in the industry. Nobody made money. So that's all changing now. COVID raised the pay rate. People are being compensated appropriately now. But we've also lost a lot of labor. So it's forcing this sort of relook at how we do things in the kitchen, and chefs are getting more efficient, and they're finding that natural balance. One of the things my company does is we do operational consulting for large food service operations. And I usually get called in when the costs are just through the roof and they don't know how to cut them anymore without cutting quality. And I always take the stance of blending the right people with the right technology. That's always my stance. Like, I don't care what kitchen I go in. They could be the most buttoned up. There's somebody that's not needed there, or there's a tool that's not needed there, right? Because people didn't understand what the tool really did, or people had this mentality that I just hire people to fix problems, and then I like that person, I don't want to fire them, so I'm just going to keep them over there chopping bell peppers all day, you know? It's like, that's how it became. It's like, there has to be a balance, right? Because there's never been margins in the industry. That's why people get paid dirt. I mean, for the longest time, and still to this day, if you made 8 points of profit off of your business at the end of the day, you were successful and you were doing well.
Yeah.
8 points of profit. What other industry or business is considered sustainable and 8 points of profit? None. And this is why we see so many restaurants fail. This is why we see so many doors close. And a lot of it is just inefficiencies in the thought process behind cooking. For instance, food processors. There's not enough food processors being used in kitchens, or they're using them, but for very limited tasks. I don't know for the life of me why chefs rely so much on people holding a knife to cut things. Why? Why? It makes no sense to me. Mm-hmm. There is nobody. I'm really good with a fucking knife, right? Like, I've been chopping parmentiers, dice, large dice, brinoises, minces, whatever, for years. I'm good with a knife. I can't cut as fast and as accurate as a food processor. So why are we not using them?
Yep.
Why are we not dicing all of our vegetables in a food processor? You know, and I struggle with, you know, my career sometimes, because like part of what I do is I fire a lot of people. When I get hired as a consultant to come in, I'm usually firing at least a third of the staff by the end of the time I'm there. And to me, it's like this, I have to do it. That's my job. I love that I'm teaching business owners and chefs a new way at life, to where like the biggest thing for me is when a chef comes up is like, now with this new system in place, like I get time with my family. I have 2 days off a week. You know, I'm not working 7 days. Like to me, that's like beaming light. But at the end of the day, like I fired 4 of your prep cooks this week, you know, like, and then I think of those people, they were just fodder that were caught up in the inefficient cycle. They had no control over it. They were doing what was available to them and making money. And like, that hurts me too. But you know, there's that balance. It's always a balance of good technology and good people. And when you find the good people, whether they were put in the wrong position, you can kind of shuffle them around to find where their strengths are and get them that position. And that's what I always try to do, is like that balance. And that's coming forefront now. We have technologies that manage all of our paperwork now. We have AI to help us write menus and, you know, manage our waste. We have sustainability technology out there to make sure we're not wasting time or ingredients. We've got automated, you know, cabinets that are doing very complex processes safely. Like, there's no need to be ignorant anymore. If you want to make money in this business and you want to make exceptional product, you need technology.
Yeah.
Period.
Well, yeah. And even at large scale, right? I was in institutions feeding thousands of people a day. It wasn't necessarily, and it was funny, every place I went to, it was, the staff was always reduced, to your point, by a third usually. And I think, like you said, people get caught up in that. And I always had to tell myself, like, yes, I just had to let go. You know, think of the university. I mean, one of them, we had 170 on staff. I only needed, I did all my equations, FTE equivalencies, even with part-times, turn them, I only needed 130. I had to, and I think it whittled down to 115 once we got like super efficient and got in new equipment. But I had to just think, it was supposed to be that way from the beginning. It just got ran away. And to your point, was people were like, well, let's just hire more people to fix the problem of we can't get enough food out. So let's just keep hiring people. And there was a lot of dead weight. You know, there's always going to be some dead weight. I'm like, you don't do anything. You literally are just collecting a paycheck and watching these people work.
Yeah.
And you're not doing, you're contributing zero to the operation.
Yep.
So you've got to go in the story. There's those. And then again, there's those that just don't have the skill set
to move up.
To move up and to be, or to be competent enough where they don't want to change. Whatever. They go. But we always do just the same thing. We would introduce small pieces of equipment. It didn't take a lot.
No, it doesn't.
We would introduce RoboCoos and Edlin slicers, dicers, and wedgers, like little
vacuum little machines. Things
that would change things. And people are like, wait, what do you mean I can do all this at one time? I'm like, yeah, that's the whole point. I don't need somebody with a knife in their hand. And people would argue and fight. And that was all that. I love that challenge in the kitchen, especially at that level, because those people aren't, you know, they're not skilled with a knife, like truly skilled. I can cut that faster than that machine can.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Here, let's see it. Here's whatever, a box. I'll give you 5 tomatoes and you dice those, and I'm going to use this piece of equipment. And I've gotten through a whole case and you haven't even got through 5.
Yep.
And then they look at you and this is why we're going to use this piece of equipment.
Yep.
And if you don't want to adapt to that, then we don't have a spot for you here any longer.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Some adapted, some were like, this is phenomenal, right? They just needed to see the mind change. And then the others that are just like, I don't care, I'm still doing it. Nope. Then you don't belong in the kitchen anymore.
Every culinarian I've ever met wants an easier job. Not like a different job, but they want their jobs to be easier. Every single one. There's not one that I know, even in the most technologically advanced, because our jobs are stressful. We're under constant scrutiny, constant pressure. We're against the clock constantly. The delivery drivers don't show up. The sous chef shows up drunk from the night before, right? Like there's all these variables that naturally go wrong. So why wouldn't you want to purchase something that, A, usually ends up being a lot cheaper than the person you hired over the length of its life?
Yep.
Why wouldn't you want to hire something that doesn't call off, doesn't usually break on you if you treat it right, and does things faster and more consistent than any human you can hire? My experience in managing is the hardest part about being a manager is fucking people. Everybody has their own personality. Everybody has their own thought of doing things. Free will is a beautiful thing. It makes humans these amazing creatures, but it also makes it very hard to get a group of them to do anything right, right? And that's the chef's dilemma. So I always go in and I try to say, like, okay, who are our shining stars? The people that really want to be here and are doing it because they're passionate about it. They care about the guests. They care about the food product. I latch onto those people. I find out what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I know what they need, then we start putting in the pieces, the technology. Yep. And usually when I do that system, you find this balance at the end where now chefs are being paid 20 to 30% more in some instances than they were before because so much money is being saved on labor and waste. You got chefs who are able to take time off and vacations with their family, paid vacations with their family. I have one operation that I went in and cleaned shop, did this. It was a slugfest. One of the hardest things I've ever done. But now, 5 years later, talking to the people there, they have a better quality of life because of the systems we set up. They're getting paid more. Their jobs are easier. They have normal schedules. And their production is not reactive. It's proactive. And that's the key that most people don't understand. This technology affords you the chance to finally have full control over your prep and your food quality. Mm-hmm. You know, like meat cooking. When I was growing up, it was the meat came in a cryovac thing. The sous chef or butcher opened that cryovac thing, butchered it with a ton of waste that just went in the trash can usually, right? So there's money down the drain. And then you had to have a guy that knew how to cook those steaks right every time. I was that guy usually. I was a grill guy growing up as a line cook. And I used to bully my chefs all the time. Like, I'm not coming in Saturday. You know, I need a raise. And the chef would be like, okay, give this guy a raise, fire him, or send back half of my steaks and lose shit tons of money that night, right? Fast forward to when I had my restaurant, me and my sous chef were the only two people who had ever cooked professionally in a kitchen before. I used technology to balance all of the low-level line cooks and literally kids. I hired kids that were playing hacky sack in our parking lot when we were renovating. There were three of my line cooks were kids that were playing hacky sack.
Nice.
16, 19, and 20 years old. Some of the best cooks to this day. Those kids can cook circles around most people because they learned on systems that incorporated technology and tradition, right? Yeah. So they appreciate sous vide, right? I was able to get to a production schedule where my meat came in from the farm on Tuesday, was butchered on Tuesday. Wednesdays, we were making stocks and fabricating the meat further into vacuum bags, marinades, whatever you're doing. Thursday, it was all cooked sous vide, cryovac. So I had 2 weeks shelf life minimum, you know. You can push it further with a HACCP plan or whatever. But I was now had a production schedule based on the par levels and the spreadsheets I built. I knew my par levels that I was not working against the clock and like quick rushing to butcher that strip loin or quick rushing to cook this thing off because we ran out. No, I knew when my meat came in, I knew when my stocks were made, I knew when my production happened for these things. And if I ran out, cool. That's a good image to run out of some food on your menu. People don't understand that. That means it's fresh.
Yeah.
That means you're making stuff from scratch. Obviously, you don't want to 86 your whole menu. That's a bad look. But like two dishes, three dishes, whatever. Eventually, you get to a point where you get your par levels and you build a system that works to that. So you know what that did for us is that opened up a full day of research and development for my team where we weren't pressured with prep. We had the time to work as a team to actually push our limits, you know, see what was possible, look into these techniques we saw online, you know?
And they're having fun.
And we were having fun.
That's the fun part, right? Yes. Everyone wants to do the R&D and the research and figuring out what works and put their touch into something and be like, I got this idea, but I don't have time to actually work on it because 100%. We're so busy doing the nuts and bolts every day. To have one day to do that, it's magical.
It was night and day kitchen culture in that kitchen versus a lot of the other kitchens I worked with. And I attribute it to technology. And that, like you said, I was able to pay my cooks more. And we were able to look at the things that we never had time to ever do before.
Yeah.
Now we had time.
Yep.
So it just creates a better work environment, a much better sustainable system overall. Right? 100%.
And again, it doesn't matter what part of the industry, if you're running a food operation and you do these things, small scale, medium scale, large scale, it works. I've had the same experience. When we let all those people go, we put the efficiencies in place, we started getting better equipment, more fun equipment.
Yeah, of course.
Right? That even in higher ed institute, people are like, wait, we got to use this? I'm like, yeah, isn't this fun?
Yeah.
We're adding pieces of equipment that we never had, doubling what we've got. Everyone's getting raises. We're doing Christmas parties and things that like, these are very family oriented people. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, oh my God, we couldn't believe like all the prizes and all the things that we did and all this food. And you're like, that's why we've been working so hard this past year to do all these things. In the moment, right? Fucking hated me. They fucking, they're like, of course, yeah. I hate you.
People don't like change. But they love change, but they don't like change.
Yeah, and then they, when those that stuck with it, I'm like, I have three rules. I'm like, show up to work when you're supposed to be, do what you're told to do, and treat people with respect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, you do those three things, you will never hear from me, ever. And those that followed it, man, when we came on the other side, they're just like, this is the greatest ever. I cannot believe we were working so hard and doing all these things when we can do all this. I'm like, that's the beauty of efficiency and of an operation. Mm-hmm. But
systems matter. Technology systems matters. Matter.
Totally. Yeah, like, that I want to talk about, you know, you're on a new adventure with your business.
Yeah, yeah.
Go through that, seeing your mental, even your mental health from when, you know, we first kind of met and chatted. God, it's been almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
It's like a year and a half, 2 years, almost
Time
2 years.
Time flies, dude.
And seeing you, you know, I can recollect it of where you were at NRA, and I could just see how frustrated you were, like mentally, physically. You could just read it on your face, and I was like, well, I'm not going to get it, because it was the first time I was going to get to meet you in person.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because we never met in person. We'd only chatted.
That was an ugly year at NRA.
But to where you are now,
yeah,
coming in vibrant, you can just feel the energy, the excitement. Maybe talk about what you're doing,
sure,
where you're at
sure,
now.
Yeah. So, yeah, I owned restaurants like we had talked about. As with most restaurants, they can get the best of you, and we had a almost utopic system happening at my restaurant with production and food development and whatever. But since I grew up in the industry I grew up in, and we were talking about, you know, badges of honor with hurting yourself and this masochism of like pushing through, that never leaves you as a chef, especially if you were raised in that industry. And that's probably the biggest negative quality I can say about myself personally, is I push, and I push hard, and I pushed really hard in my restaurant to the point where people very close to me didn't know me anymore, and I was almost a raging alcoholic. I mean, yeah, I was an alcoholic. Let's admit that. Like, I was drinking a giant bottle of bourbon, those magnum-sized bottles, every other day. I was going through one. So, yeah, I was bad. So I did some evaluation, you know, like most chefs should do. Most don't, because they don't think they can do anything else. And I told myself, well, I don't want to die on the hill here, you know, and I got my closest people to me saying they don't even know me anymore. Yeah, so it's time. Right. Yeah. And I was fortunate enough to have been working with a technology, German technology company at the time, who had been coming into my restaurant and having us train and whatnot. So I jumped over to this side of things, and I was helping build out their food service division, and I was learning the ins and outs of the sales network and the new technologies out there and blending it with what I knew about technologies. And that led me into the corporate world. And if anybody's worked in corporate America, it sucks. Hence, fast forward, I met you, right? Yep. And that was at the end of my corporate stint, where, like everything, there's good and bad to everything. And the corporate world was really good to me in a lot of ways. You know, I got to see the world. I got to meet a lot of connections that I hold dear to this day. And I learned a lot of new things and new perspectives on things, but I also realized that chefs, we are powerful people in the business world. We are more qualified than 8 out of 10 of the office people that are out there, even without a high level of education. And that's kind of like the myth, right? They tell you if you don't have a master's in this and that, you won't hack it in the corporate world. These business people are cutthroat and blah, blah, blah. Nothing's more cutthroat than a kitchen.
That is true.
There's no career that I can think of off the top of my head that wears as many hats as a chef. You know, we have to, you know, be engineers. We have to be creative. We have to manage a business and make sure the books balance. We have to fix our equipment when it breaks down in the middle of service. Like, you have to know a little bit of everything to succeed as a chef. Those qualities come to the forefront in the corporate world, because in the corporate world, there's a lot of laziness. There's a lot of backstabbing and politics and nonsense. And most people don't go above and beyond for their job. They do just enough to get by, to get that fat paycheck. And coming in as a chef, I was like, I remember getting yelled at by my first boss because I was in the office till like 7-8 at night. Day ended at 5. And he was like, why are you staying there? I'm like, I got work to do. He's like, no, you don't. At 5 o'clock, we're done. And to me, that did not click. I was like, no, there's work to be done. I'm going to finish my job for the day. This is what I set out, and I'm going to do it, you know? And like, so I had to unlearn those qualities. But I also saw that in my job role within this sector of the industry, I was running laps around my cohorts in the business, you know, the other chefs I were managing, you know, corporate world, right? Because you know, not to be, there's a lot of chefs out there with a lot of talent that get into the corporate world, but there's also a lot of chefs that they do it for the ease because the kitchen was hard on them, right? And but they never gave the kitchen a chance either in a lot of those cases. They jumped out really easily. So like I saw myself able to do things and put things in place and make connections and things happen at a really fast rate that people had been struggling with on marketing teams for a while. And I really attribute that. It's not like I'm a genius responder, I'm special. I just have that chef mentality of like, if I have goals or if I see connections, I'm going to do it. And there's never a time I ever say that's not my job. I may be unfamiliar with something, but give me a second. I'll learn about it and I'll be back to you. And that's always been my, and I was able to kind of really like formulate a career and like build upon that. Well, fast forward to when I met you was the end of my corporate life. I was burnt out, done. Things were rough. So I started my own company and we started out doing operational consulting and I did it on the side for a while under my company Mies Concepts. It was all operational and sustainability consulting up to about, I'd say, August, September of last year. My clients started coming to me and saying, hey, like, you've been in videos and stuff. I saw you online. Can you do videos for us? And I was like, yeah, but I don't have a videographer and like this and that. And so, you know, push that off. Well, now, since there's been a lot of traction, like we've brought on a videographer, we've brought on a social media management firm, and we've brought on a web development firm. So we've become sort of like a full, other than a PR consultant, which I'm looking into right now, we are a full-fledged marketing firm for the food service industry. And what we are doing now is we're helping build brands, right? Like for food service equipment providers or technique people who develop new techniques or new food products. We're helping the person who's going to use those products understand and love those products. We're building brand identities for people. And along the way, we're still doing the operational consulting because, you know, some of my clients are restaurants and stuff. So we get involved with like social media management and Instagram, building the following and building that brand awareness and loyalty. I love it. You know, like you said, I'm vibrant now. I feel alive because I feel like all of this effort I'm putting in is finally going towards a better part of life, right? Like I can see our fingerprint at Mies working its way through the industry. Like I can see things we've influenced. I can see clients that have, you know, benefited from our work. I can see chefs get interested in what we're doing and asking questions about cool technology they may never have known about. So like, I feel like all of that stuff I went through kind of just was meant to be to push me to this point because I'm seeing Mies really make a difference and it's making me happy and fulfilled. So yeah, it's like, it's a complete 360 or I'm sorry, 180 to what I was doing before, but, and it's unfamiliar, but it's extremely rewarding, you know? And to any chefs out there who are watching this, you don't have to be stuck on a line. There are so many job opportunities out there that would love to have a person with your credentials and your work ethic and your qualities to support it. And you never know where that's going to lead. Yep. I tell my students that all the time. Like you could go into this thinking my career path, like me, it was I'm going to work on a line. I'm going to learn from the best chefs and then I'm going to open my own restaurant. And that's it. That was the goal.
Yep.
I did that by 28 and I was like, what's next? Right. And what's next was a whole world I didn't even anticipate.
Yeah.
I didn't see myself in this world, you know, like, and now
I'm here
and it's great. It's like, it's dreams I never thought I had came true.
Well, it's the fear. I'm somewhat similar boat, right? I hit a lot of goals. I had the same kind of aspirations. I wanted a restaurant. And then once I actually, I guess I got lucky and like, I was like,
you dodged a bullet.
I don't think the return on this is going to be worth my time.
You dodged a bullet, man.
So. But I hit a lot of those goals, right? 28, yeah. I had my first kitchen. And it wasn't just like a little kitchen. I was managing, it was like $4 million technically worth of business within a university setting. I
mean, feeding thousands of people a day, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
holy and then shit. Next thing you know, it's two kitchens. And now we're feeding 5,000 kids. I have a total of like 200 employees under my umbrella. Maybe not 200, but it was a lot. And then just you kept going to more and more. It's like, okay, well, what's next? Okay, now I'm going to be the GM of an account. Okay, that's done. Now let's go to a bigger one.
Yeah.
And it was just like rinse and repeat. Same
chef type mentality. You just keep going, right? What's next?
Same type deal. And I hit all these lofty goals. And again, I hate and I like when people doubt because it pushes me.
Oh, yeah.
Because in my first role, it was, you know, I was working hard, head down, just work hard every day. Just come in, get it done, work the doubles, work to learn every position there is. And then when it's time for that position to open up for that full-time sous chef, it was, well, you need to be doing something like this for at least 10 years.
Yeah.
To get a role like that. Like a role like this is like an executive chef in a regular restaurant. And I was just like, how dare he tell me that I'm not qualified when I'm doing a lot of the stuff that they're doing. And then that's when I had left there and went and started, you know, into the institution world and got my first kitchen. I'm like, oh shit, well, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Right. And then you keep hitting these goals and then you're like, well, fuck, what do I, like you hit that epiphany. Like, I don't know what to do. I've hit everything that I've accomplished to do. Maybe not in every setting in this industry. And then same type thing. It just, one thing led to another and ended up on my own and meeting some great people here and building around. And there's been some tough times. Like building a company is not easy.
No.
Anyone that says, oh man, just go start a company. It is a lot of
I struggle hard work. Every day. Like it's again, this chef mentality, which is beautiful because it pushes us to keep going forward, but nothing's ever good enough. Nothing is ever good enough. Like if I were able to take myself out of my experiences or whatever and just look at myself as a person and my business and everything, everything's good, right? Like things are good. Is it where I want it to be? It's never where I want it to be. So, but you're right. Anybody that says starting your own business is easy has never started their own business. It is harder than anything I've ever done. It's more emotionally exhaustive because there's more at stake now.
Yeah.
Like, before I was worried about me and my career. Now I'm worried about me and my team and their livelihood. It's the best stress ever because at the end of the day, I'm doing it with purpose. I'm doing it with a goal that's not self-serving to just be the best in a kitchen or do this thing that people told me I couldn't do. You know, like that was my motivator for a long time. I love being underestimated too, man. That's the greatest thing ever. It's like, okay, yeah, you think I'm a piece of shit? Let's go. I'll show you how I
can. And I've always been humble enough though to never like go back and just rub it in their face and be
never.
Like, look at me. I fucking made it. It was just, I'm going to let my actions show you why you were wrong.
Exactly.
And let them, you know, that just eats at them in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. You'll never say it. You'll never see it. You'll never hear it. But you just, you know, deep down, you're like,
yeah,
I did it.
Yeah,
exactly. You were wrong. So
it's so good, man.
So eat it.
Yeah.
You know, literally and figuratively.
Chef mentality is the best. Chef culture is the best. I love chefs. We are the only profession I know. Like, we're modern day pirates. We're modern day pirates. You know, like. We travel from kitchen to kitchen to learn the best, the, you know, loot the booty of the kitchen, if you will, like get those secrets and those experience and those connections, that network. And then you go to the next place and you just keep building on it. And the thing I really, really love about our culture is not just the work ethic and the brains that it forms in us as culinarians, but the culture itself. I can go to Thailand and I meet a chef. And they find out I'm a chef. I mean, I got the telltale signs. I got the tattoos and, you know, I was really fat at one point, so people would tell. But now you look at me and you could say he's either a chef or a biker or an inmate. You know what I mean? So usually it's chef because I'm wearing like graphic tees with culinary stuff a lot of the times. But to my point, like you meet a chef from around the world, completely different cultures you grew up in, completely different work experiences, whatever. But we're brothers. We're sisters. You know, that's my family. And I love that about our industry. I don't see it in many other industries other than maybe like frontline soldiers and you know, military, right? Like that camaraderie and the lengths we go to help each other is amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's a phenomenal culture for that just alone, you know?
Yeah. No, this conversation's been, we could probably continue to talk for, God, I don't even know.
Oh, we've been going for over an hour, yeah.
Yeah, quite a while, but I had to bring to a light a lot of the conversations that we've had, like these little sidebars as we're going through, going through things and showing things. I mean, again, there's so many more rabbit holes, but you know, we'll be seeing each other more.
Oh yeah.
We'll be doing a lot more. So, you know, I'm sure we can sit down and do some more chats and I got to come out to the East Coast and
See
your operation, see what you've got going on. Yeah. I've seen some of the videos you showed today. Awesome work you're doing.
Thanks.
Already, you can feel it. You can, like you said, the way that chefs do things, you can feel it in the work.
Yes.
You see it. You know that there's a level of complexity and to your point, it's a blessing and a curse, that perfectionism that we have.
Yeah.
And it just, it can eat at you, but at the same time, it can drive you to do incredible things that other people would just be like, I'm good with that.
My therapist loves it. She makes money off of it. So.
Yeah, if you don't have a therapist, you should probably have one of
those. Mental health is important, everybody. You are not weak for going to see a therapist. Yeah. I think everybody needs mental health, especially in our industry.
Yeah.
I think that's, just to close this out, like, that's something that we haven't talked about for a long time, and it's starting to come to the forefront. There's a lot of problems that exist in our culture, and there's a lot of people dying from drugs and suicides in our industry that's not being talked about enough. And I think it's because we feel we can't go for help that makes us weak.
Yeah.
You are not weak for speaking about what goes on inside your head. We are complex creatures with very complex emotional, you know, draws and thoughts. And it's important that you get that out with a professional before going to that bottle or that needle or that gun. Right. And I think that needs to be said. So not to make this like a ending that's weird, but like, I think chefs need to understand that.
Yeah, and there's things out there, the Burnt Chef Project.
Yes,
that was a
Burnt
big
Chef
one. They're phenomenal people.
Yes.
So you can always check them out to learn more about those things. Where does everyone go? They want to know about you, your awesome social media, because it's I literally one of my highlights of my day is going through what Dust is in Dustin's stories. But your socials, your company,
where
do people go?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to check us out, I really, really, I just on Instagram. So Mies Concepts is our business account. And then Savage Lead Dusty is my personal account. Find us there. I don't believe in the whole website thing. I think those are dying for a company like ours. I think word of mouth is the king and social media is the king. So if you want to find out about us there, you can DM us. That's the fastest way to get a hold of me. Emails will probably sit there for a little bit because I got them stacked all the time. And I don't answer phone calls. Not unless I know who the number is. I always screen them. So reach out to me in DM. Be happy to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, so we'll link those in the show notes so people can find you. And again, on his actual Instagram, if you're easily offended, don't follow him. I'm just saying there can be things on there. Whether you agree or not, it's still funny as shit.
It's very colorful. Yes.
Oh, it's the best. I absolutely love it. So again, Dustin, thanks for coming out here, having this conversation. And again, I know there's a lot more to come.
Yeah.
And for those that are watching, go check out Dustin. Go check out everything that he's got going on. And until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side.
Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.